All right. Hello, everyone, and happy May 6th. It's good to be with you. As Ken mentioned, we are here for the Guiding Light, and I am sharing from the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi. And tonight we'll begin on page 41, which is the section called Work and Renunciation. But before I do that, I'm going to play a song. This song has been one of my favorites for a number of years. It's by Avril Lavigne, and it's called Innocence.
Waking up to see that everything is okay. The first time in my life and now it's so great. Slowing down, I look around and I'm so amazed. I think about the little things that make life great. I wouldn't change a thing about it. This is the best feeling.
Lovely song. what I will do is, again, I'll begin reading from the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi on page 41 with the new section, Work and Renunciation. So it says a disciple this time. It's interesting because before I think we just had a questioner. Yeah, and this time it specifies the questioner as a disciple. So the disciple says, what is the highest goal of spiritual experience for man? And Ramana Maharshi replies, self-realization. The disciple asks, can a married man realize the self? And Ramana Maharshi answers, certainly. Married or unmarried, a man can realize the self because that is here and now. If it were not so, but attainable by some effort at some time, and if it were new and had to be acquired, it would not be worth pursuit, because what is not natural is not permanent either. But what I say is that the self is here and now and alone, which I think is an interesting ending to that sentence, and alone. So before I move on, I just want to emphasize what Ramana Maharshi is saying is that if the self was some kind of a new achievement that you had to work hard, maybe even work just right to attain, and only some people could attain it, and not everyone could, he says it's not worth it because then it wouldn't be natural. So it's interesting because, a lot of people, I think of spiritual enlightenment as some, I'm going to call it some grand accomplishment. Does that sound about right? Some grand accomplishment. And listen to the difference in these terms. Grand accomplishment, natural. Do you hear the difference? Grand accomplishment, natural. You know, and Ramana Maharshi is saying that the reason that the true self is desirable is because it is natural, because it is our natural state. What we're trying to return to, those words weren't the best words, but you get my point, is realization of what we are. We're not trying to achieve something new. Also, I mentioned at the end of this sentence was pretty interesting. He says, but what I say is that the self is here and now and alone. That's kind of interesting, don't you think? Alone. So what does he mean by that? Well, I can only tell you my sense of what he means by that. but my sense is that the self is all that is. There really is nothing else here. Therefore, the self is alone, right? It's the soul, S-O-L-E, right? It's the soul, matter. It's the only word that's coming to my mind. It's the soul matter. It's what everything is. There really isn't anything else. And so it's not only natural, but it's all that is, right? So again, can a married man realize the self? And Jacqueline is saying, this reminds me of the question she's often heard, can a CEO be enlightened? And Ramana Maharshi's answer is, certainly. Married or unmarried, a man can realize the self because that is here and now. If it were not so, but attainable by some effort at some time, and if it were new and had to be acquired, it would not be worth pursuit, because what is not natural is not permanent either. But what I say is that the self is here and now and alone. The disciple says, a salt doll diving into the sea will not be protected by a waterproof coat. This world in which we have to toil day in and day out is like the ocean. Now, of course, the first time I read this, I had to really pause because I didn't know what a salt doll was. So I had to pause and really contemplate that. And I think I may have even found a picture of one. But it is a doll made of a hard salt. And so when you throw that doll into the ocean, it's going to dissolve, right? The doll needs to stay dry. So a salt doll diving into the sea will not be protected by a waterproof coat. This world in which we have to toil day in and day out is like the ocean. And Ramana Maharshi says, yes, the mind is the waterproof coat. So what he is saying is that we think that the mind will protect us in the world. And we do think that, right? We think that we can figure things out with the mind. We think that the mind is our wisdom. And we think the mind protects us. But as the disciple just said, a salt doll diving into the sea will not be protected by a waterproof coat. And Ramana Maharshi is saying the mind is the waterproof coat. It's not going to protect us in the world. We may think it does. We may be the salt doll who puts on the coat thinking it's going to protect us in the world. But it doesn't. And so the disciple continues, so then, one may be engaged in work and, free from desire, keep up one's solitude. But life's duties allow little time to sit in meditation or even to pray. And Ramana Maharshi says, yes. So the yes is to the very first question, which was that one may be engaged in work, free from desire, and that is solitude. Krishna taught something similar in the Bhagavad Gita, that if we work without attachment, that is, I don't know that he used the word solitude, but that is freedom, that is solitude, that is meditation. So Ramana Maharshi says yes to that, and then he continues, work performed with attachment is a shackle, whereas work performed with detachment does not affect the doer. He is, even while working, in solitude. To engage in your duty is true homage, and abiding in God is the only true yoga posture. To engage in your duty is the true homage. I'm going to look up that word homage. It's barely familiar to me. I'm imagining it as like worship, but I'm going to look it up. Homage is it says a special honor or respect. A special honor or respect. So maybe in that way it is similar to worship, right? A special honor or respect. So to engage in your duty is the true homage. And abiding in God is the only true yoga posture. So again, Ramana Maharshi is not at all discouraging a regular daily life, what is called a householder's life. He is not at all discouraging a regular daily life, nor is he saying that daily life itself is an obstacle to God. He would say that attachment to your daily life is an obstacle to God. Because he says, work performed with attachment is a shackle. So, you know, we can just look at all of our different roles and responsibilities. You know, we can look at our roles and responsibilities as parents. And if we have attachments to how our children turn out or how our children live their lives, even how our children feel, then that is a shackle and it's an obstacle to self-realization. If we have certain ways that we want our spouse or partner to be, if we're pleased with them in some cases, you know, when they be a certain way, and we're displeased with them in other cases when they be another way, then our relationship to our spouse is a shackle, an obstacle to self-realization. In our job, if we are attached to the outcomes, attached to the feeling of success, attached to our boss perceiving us as doing a good job, attached to meeting certain goals like making a certain amount of money by a certain age, being able to retire by a certain age, any of that type of thing, then our job is a shackle. It is an obstacle to self-realization. You know, and I'm sure that we could just go on and on and on. I mean, I personally am not a gardener. My yard does what my yard does. Every now and then, about twice a year, I'll go out there and do something. But most of the time, it's pretty wild. But, you know, some people are really into gardening and making their yard look a certain way. And there may be a lot of pride in the yard. And there may be, you know, some upset if a particular plant doesn't survive or doesn't bloom in the way it's supposed to bloom. In that case, even taking care of our yard becomes a shackle, right? It really doesn't matter which of our roles and responsibilities we're talking about. If we have a desire that things work out in a particular way, then it's a shackle. It's an obstacle to self-realization. However, he continues, work performed with attachment is a shackle, whereas work performed with detachment does not affect the doer. He is, even while working, in solitude. So all of those same roles and responsibilities that I just described, you know, that of being parent, that of being spouse, that of being employee or employer, right? That of being, you know, gardener, you know, and any other role and responsibility we can talk about. If we're able to just fulfill our function, just do what needs to be done because it's in front of us to be done without any attachment to outcomes. Ramana Maharshi goes so far as to call that solitude. First, he says, work performed with detachment does not affect the doer, right? So that's kind of benign. You know, it doesn't get in your way. You know, and if it was that sentence alone, it might sound like, you know, it doesn't hurt you, it doesn't help you, right? But it's not that sentence alone. He actually goes on and says, he is even while working in solitude. Now, solitude, we all know, is helpful towards self-realization. So what this means is that all of our roles and responsibilities performed without attachment can be helpful to self-realization. And in fact, this is one of the reasons why I love the Bhagavad Gita. That's really the key message of the Bhagavad Gita. The key message of the Bhagavad Gita is called Karma Yoga. Karma Yoga. And what Karma Yoga is do what comes to you to be done in a non-attached way, and that is your path of awakening. Do what comes to you to be done in a non-attached way, and that is your path of awakening. In other words, your roles and responsibilities themselves, your karma itself, is your path to awakening if you're able to just be with it perform those tasks as an observer without being caught up mentally in your tasks, without trying to put on the raincoat of the mind. And that is your path of awakening. And this always excites me because it seems that, my life is a pretty busy life. I do have that quiet time every morning, what feels like my time of solitude every morning. And I value that, and I've been able to have that for years. And in the times that I didn't take that because I thought I was even too busy for that, that's when attachment started coming back again. That's when my work became an obstacle. So the solitude in the morning seems to be keep me grounded in purpose, right? Keep me grounded in the right mind. But once that solitude ends, you could say I hit the ground running and I run the rest of the day until I go to bed. I do stop a little bit before bed to kind of relax and wind down. But, there's just do this, do this, do this, do this, do this, do this. And by the way, I don't really feel like I am avoiding anything by creating work as a defense against God. I feel like this is just the work that comes to me to be done. It seems like every time I complete a project that has been taking a significant amount of time, a new project is naturally born. And it's just always been this way. Right? So there's always something, but it seems to happen. So it would be really a self-defeating feeling if I thought that I had to somehow make that stop when it seems to happen all by itself, make that stop and sit and close my eyes in meditation, for 12 hours a day. Not only that, I don't even think I could sit in meditation for 12 hours a day. I don't seem to be that good at meditating. So if I thought that that is what I had to do, it would really feel like, well, shit, pardon the pun. I actually sweetened it up because it would have been the F one. I can't do this. Right? I can't do this. What's required of me, I cannot do. My life does not allow it. So karma yoga, knowing that there is a way to just be in my life, which is abiding as the self, being the observer, and that this is also solitude, that this is also helpful, really excites me and makes me feel relieved and opens my heart to all of that. Of course, we have seen that work can be a defense against God. And so this is where we have to get self-honest. It doesn't help to say I have no attachments when I do. It doesn't help to lie to myself, right? Then my work is an obstacle to truth. But if I can truly just be with my day in a detached observer kind of way, still, playing my role, doing my tasks to the best of my ability, right? But if something doesn't go the way it was intended to go, being as okay with that as if it did go the way it was intended to go, right? That's karma yoga. That's what Ramana Maharshi is calling solitude. And that is, for me, a blessing because it gives me a path that is natural to my lifetime. And there's that word again, natural. Right? If I had to go to extreme efforts to fight the universe, to completely clear the schedule so that I could meditate all day, 12 hours a day, because that is not natural, I don't expect it would last. Something would happen. Something would come up. I would not be able to maintain that because something would require my attention. Because that's my karma. right? So again, Ramana Maharshi says, work performed with attachment is a shackle, whereas work performed with detachment does not affect the doer. He is, even while working, in solitude. And then listen to this sentence. To engage in your duty is the true homage. What does that mean? Well, that is, if you know the Bhagavad Gita, that is what Krishna was teaching Arjuna. Right? Arjuna at that time was a prince and a soldier, and his job was to go to war. And Krishna taught him that even that duty, right, needed to be performed without attachment. Right? Even that duty needed to be performed without attachment. So what does it mean that to engage in your duty is the true homage? Well, you know, I have a towel hanging in my kitchen that has a scripture on it from Psalm, I think it's 118. And the scripture is something about, you know, we will rejoice in this day because it is the day the Lord has made. Right? It is the day the Lord has made. If everything that comes to us through consciousness, and it does, if everything that comes to us through consciousness, through our oneness, then I am respecting our oneness. I am paying homage to our oneness by accepting what comes for me to do without resistance and without attachment, without a sense of control. It's the homage in this case is the opposite of resisting and thinking things should be different than they are. It's accepting the roles and responsibilities that come to me through our oneness with great respect and performing those duties to the best of my ability. You know, that's an interesting little detail because, you know, some people might think, well, if I'm detached, then that means I do a half-assed job. It means I don't really care. But that wouldn't be homage, will it? That wouldn't be the respect, would it? If I do a job half-assed and call that detachment, I can't call it respect. So if he's using both the words detachment and the words homage, what he's pointing to is doing my duties to the best of my ability without being attached to the outcome. And, you know, I find that's something that the ego can't do. Only the right mind can do that. The ego can't do something to the best of its ability without attachment to outcome. The ego expects some kind of a reward. It either turns out the way I wanted it to turn out, or somebody notices my efforts and tells me what a great job I'm doing, or something, right? It needs to get something out of it. The ego needs to get something. And if it's not going to get anything, then it's not going to put that much effort into it. So it's either, you know, the half-assed job or, you know, putting my best effort in but expecting to get something out of it, you know, out of my best effort. That's really the ego. It can't find this middle ground that Ramana Maharshi is pointing to, which is putting my best effort in, which is respect for consciousness that sent me this task, doing it to the best of my ability and without attachment. He says, to engage in your duty is the true homage, and abiding in God is the only true yoga posture. So abiding in God all of the time, right? Not just in that purposeful solitude time in the morning, but throughout the day. And how do we abide in God throughout the day? For me, it's primarily two steps. There's a third step that I still sometimes use, and many of you may need to use it full time. the two primary steps that I use are being inward focused on intuition, also paying attention to awareness, consciousness. You know, if you're in gentle healing, you know that there are games that I give us to play each week, playing those types of games. That's paying attention to awareness or consciousness, even while moving about. And then the third one that I sometimes still engage in, and some of you guys may need to engage in all the time, is watching the mind, being the observer of the mind. Because if we aren't watching the mind, if we aren't being the observer of the mind, it's typically telling us all kinds of stories and we're just believing it. If you're not watching, you're believing. So if you have a mind that's still a great storyteller, then you need to be an observer of the mind. Right? You need to be aware of what the mind is saying. You need to make conscious choices about whether you will believe it or not believe it. You need to practice discernment consciously. At some time, the mind becomes more quiet, and then that isn't a step that you have to practice as much anymore. But if the mind gets activated again, then you return to the practice, right? So I practice it sometimes, but I don't have to practice it full time like I once did. But that's abiding in God. That's the true yoga posture, right? Being inward focused for intuition, being focused on awareness or consciousness, and watching the mind, practicing discernment. Now, the next thing that disciple asks is, should I renounce my home? And Nisargadatta says, if that had been your destiny, the question would not have arisen. Isn't that interesting? You know, Ramana Maharshi is one who renounced his home as a teenager, right? As a teenager, he left home and never returned. And so sometimes people look at, you know, masters like Ramana Maharshi and they think, ooh, I have to do what he did. Right? He renounced home. He renounced job. He never got married. I need to do that too. That's the holy way. Ramana Maharshi isn't saying that. He's using the word destiny here. You know, we could also use the word karma. We could also use the word script. But we could say, whatever it is that consciousness brings to you, that is what you do. So if you're one that consciousness is bringing to you the type of life where you are going to leave job and home and live, you know, like a, what do they call them, sannyasi? Is that the right word? Right, a person who has renounced everything, well, then you would know that. Right, that would be natural, there's that word again, for you. But if it's natural for you to be engaged in a marital relationship and raising children and working a job, if that's what the script has brought to you, if that's what the universe is bringing to you, then that's what you abide in. Recently in a tip based on NTI John, we saw how the way consciousness sees is that everyone is in the right place right now to realize truth. Do you remember that tip? And the real reason for that is because everything is consciousness. It's not like consciousness is at an ashram in India and not in your own house, in your own job, in your own family. If that were true, if consciousness was in an ashram in India and not in your house, not in your family, not in your job, well then, based on what Ramana Maharshi already said, it would not be worth realizing because it would not be natural. If it's natural, it's with you all the time. You are in it, and it is in you. Just like Jesus said in the book of John, I am in God, and God is in me. Or I am in the Father, and the Father is in me. That's what he said. Right? So it's natural. It is wherever you are. Therefore, wherever you are is the perfect place for self-realization. Right? Because you are in consciousness and consciousness is in you. But again, we all do seem to have different scripts that come and move us about. And so some people do seem to have that sannyasi type of script, if I'm using the right word, right? The renunciation. And some people seem to have the more living in the normal world, be in the world but not of it, that type of a script. And there's no sense in fighting whatever is natural. Because it's all consciousness. So again, the disciple asked, should I renounce my home? And Ramana Maharshi says, if that had been your destiny, the question would not have arisen. And then the disciple, why then did you leave your home in your youth? Again, seems like if you did it, it must be the holy thing to do, right? Ramana Maharshi says, nothing happens except by divine dispensation. One's course of conduct in this life is determined by one's full consciousness. So I'm going to look up dispensation. This teaching is like a lesson in vocabulary for me because I've always had simple vocabulary, and Ramana Maharshi uses a very full vocabulary. Okay, so dispensation, let me read the sentence again because there's three definitions here. So the sentence says, nothing happens except by divine dispensation. Oh, the act of distributing or supplying something would be the definition that would fit. The act of distributing or supplying something. So, yeah, God-given, Jay is saying. Right? So again, it's what we've been saying this entire time, right? Consciousness is giving you a role. And if consciousness gives you the role of someone who renunciates everyday life and goes off and stays in a cave or an ashram or a monastery or something like that, well, then that will be very natural for you. But if consciousness is distributing to you a life, raising family, having a job, those types of things, well, then it is as it is. And people may think there's a difference. People may think there's a difference between leaving your family and moving to a monastery or ashram and choosing to stay in your family and work a regular job, but there is no difference. There's no difference for two reasons. Number one, it's all consciousness, right? Whether you're in a cave, a monastery, or ashram, or whether you're living with your family and working, you have not exited consciousness. So that's one reason why both are the same. In effect, you're actually in the same place. But in addition to that, they are both what consciousness gave you to do. Whether consciousness gave you the role of leaving home and going to a monastery or ashram, or whether consciousness gave you the role of, going to college, getting a job, getting married, raising kids, right? It's still a God-given role. Therefore, it is the same. So the ideas that we have, or that some people have, that one type of lifestyle is better or more holy than another type of lifestyle, that's actually distinction, separation, and judgment. And Ramana Maharshi, who would not practice distinction, separation, or judgment, sees whatever your God-given role, whatever it is, as the same. So he does not see his role of leaving family life as a teenager and letting an ashram be built around him any different than what may be your life of, raising three kids and supporting a family, right? It's the same. It's still within consciousness, and it's still the role that was given to you by consciousness. So he says, nothing happens except by divine dispensation. One's course of conduct in this life is determined by one's full consciousness. The disciple says, is it good to devote all my time to the search for the self? If that is impossible, should I merely keep quiet? Ramana Maharshi says, if you can keep quiet without engaging in any other pursuit, it is very good. If that cannot be done, where is the use of being quiet so far as realization is concerned? So long as a person is obliged to be active, let him not give up attempts to realize the self. Again, you know, I could say, and in fact I have, and failed every time, the two or three times that I tried this. I can say I'm going to have a life of silence. And I'm not gonna. Because God puts me in meetings. You know, I have a meeting with Jacqueline at 11 a.m. tomorrow. I have a class I have to teach tomorrow afternoon at 2:30. I have a trustee meeting at 5:45 tomorrow. I have another meeting with Rebecca at 7:30 tomorrow. How in the heck am I going to be quiet outwardly? Right? So again, if that's your destiny to keep still, Ramana says that's great. But if it's not, right, if that's not possible for you, his exact words are, if that cannot be done, where is the use of being quiet? You know, like if it can't be done, then what good is it to you? It's not your karma. It's not your script. It's not your way. Now, what I would say to this, we're talking about outwardly being quiet here. What I would say to this is that as we practice the mind watching and we learn to let go of the unnecessary chatter, the mind does become more quiet. There's this, I'm going to call it an openness. There's an openness where the mind used to be, where the chatter used to be. There's an openness, right? And some people call that openness quiet. I experience it more as openness and clarity. Clarity because I can see and hear better. Because I don't have interpretive chatter in my mind telling me what I'm looking at. Right? So it's openness and clarity. But some people call that quiet or silence. But if you're experiencing that type of quiet, mental quiet, that doesn't mean that outwardly you're silent. You know, if you have a function where you go from meeting to meeting to meeting and you're talking to people all day long, you may be inwardly quiet or inwardly open and clear. But outwardly there may be a lot of talking going on, right? So if you can keep quiet without engaging in any other pursuit, it is very good. So if you are the kind of person who can sit in meditation 12 hours a day, that's great. If that's what life has given you, that's great. If that cannot be done, where is the use of being quiet so far as realization is concerned? So long as a person is obliged to be active, let him not give up attempts to realize the self. I mean, can you imagine if I read The Most Direct Means to Eternal Bliss and said, well, I can't do that, therefore I will quit trying to awaken. I'll tell you a secret. It's not really a secret. It's just something I don't think I've shared out loud before, but it's not a secret. That's just a phrase I use sometimes. When I want you to listen to me, I'll say, I'll tell you a secret. Then I get your ears, right? There was a time a few years ago when I was reading The Most Direct Means to Eternal Bliss and contemplating the seven steps to awakening when I began to believe that my job was an obstacle. You know, just like this disciple, it seems like I need to get out of this busy lifestyle so that I can meditate more. And so I thought that I would go part-time. And I was prepared to make a proposal to the board of directors that I go part-time so that I had a lot more time for meditation. And I happened to write to Michael Langford and tell Michael Langford about this intention. And Michael Langford wrote back to me and said basically that that was his general teaching, but that was not his instructions for me. That he thought that the job that I was doing with Awakening Together is what I should be doing. And he said he may often say things that make me think that I should quit my job. But when he says those things, I should know that's not true in my case. That I was doing what he wanted me to do. And in the way he said that, I felt like he was speaking as the universe, as consciousness. You are doing what I want you to do. That really says what Ramana Maharshi is saying. Consciousness gives us a role to play. And we pay respect to consciousness by playing that role without attachment. Right? We continue to seek self-realization through being tuned inward for intuition, by paying attention to consciousness awareness in daily life, and by mind watching if we're still at the stage where that needs to be done. But we don't artificially recreate our life. And if we do artificially recreate our life, if we're able to do that, it's not going to stick because it's not what consciousness is sending. Right? It's not going to stick. We aren't going to be able to make it happen. We'll keep trying and trying and trying, and we'll keep failing and failing and failing. So, if you can keep quiet without engaging in any other pursuit, it is very good. If that cannot be done, where is the use of being quiet, so far as realization is concerned? So long as a person is obliged to be active, and again, right now I am obliged to be active, let him not give up attempts to realize the self. I also occasionally will speak to a person who has nothing to do. And they literally don't. That's what the universe has given them. They have nothing to do for whatever reason, different reasons in different cases. Sometimes, you know, there is an illness that has taken them out of the work life, and so they're home all day. Sometimes they just have, you know, they have wealth, so they're home all day. You know, all kinds of reasons for this. But I have over the years known a number of people who have nothing to do. The universe is sending them nothing to do. And what's interesting is how these people suffer by thinking they should be doing something. You know, it's just like how those of us who have busy lives think, oh, my busy life is in my way. I got to get rid of this busy life, even though we can't. They think my life of having nothing to do is wrong, right? It's wrong. I have to find things to do. But what if we just accept that the life that we have is the life that we're given for the purpose of self-realization? And if I happen to be given a life with, quote, nothing to do, then possibly I'm one of these people that's going to be able to spend full days in meditation and contemplation. That's the life consciousness gave me. And maybe even beyond that, I'm not only doing it for me, I'm doing it for the whole. By fulfilling that role, right? The universe gave me nothing else to do. But if we're one of the people where the universe has given me this to do and this to do and this to do, then I do that without attachment. I do that with joy. I do that with intuition. Right? Instead of trying to change things and thinking that the life I have been given is somehow wrong. How could the universe be wrong in that way? Now, the disciple then asks, do not one's actions affect one in later births? And Ramana Maharshi says, are you born now? Why do you think of other births? The fact is, there is neither birth nor death. Let him who is born think of death and the palliative thereof. Okay, another word I don't know, so let's pull out that trusty dictionary. P-A-L-L-I-A-T-I-V-E. Oh, pain. Pain. Okay. I wonder why Ramana Maharshi didn't just say pain. I guess he wants me to use my dictionary all the time. So, do not one's actions affect one in later births? Ramana Maharshi says, are you born now? Why do you think of other births? The fact is, there is neither birth nor death. Let him who is born think of death and the pain thereof, right? So, my way of seeing seems to be shifting. And the reason I say it seems to be shifting is because I've noticed in the last probably 4 weeks a change in that sometimes I see from the point of view of consciousness. And sometimes I lose it and I see again from the point of view of person. And this is new for me. But every shift I've ever gone through, or it seems like, maybe there's a couple of exceptions, but it seems like there's this period of going kind of back and forth, you know, like when I was learning really to live by intuition, there would be a period of being in the flow with intuition and then a period of not being able to, right? Like being back in the mind, you know? So kind of this, you know, in the process of shifting, there's this phase that I tend to go through where a back and forth is happening. And I seem to be in that back and forth right now. So the reason that I'm telling you that is because when I'm in consciousness, when that is the way that I see, I don't think of things like birth and death because consciousness isn't born and it doesn't die. Right? And so, ideas like reincarnation from the perspective of consciousness make no sense. Krishna also talks about this in the Bhagavad Gita, right? But when I slip back into personhood, seen from the point of view of a person, you know, then it kind of makes sense that's how, you know, the spiritual path can continue. That's how eternal nature can continue is through birth and death. It kind of makes sense. Like if I die, at the end of this lifetime without being awake, then somehow I will be born again, in order to continue. But the I in that sentence is the person. I only see that way when I'm seen from the perspective of the person. When I'm seen from the perspective of consciousness, that entirely goes away. Because I am not born and I do not die. And so that's what Ramana Maharshi is explaining here. Right? He's explaining from the point of view of consciousness or even above consciousness that there is no such thing as reincarnation. Reincarnation is something that the point of view of person believes in because it's the only way the continuation makes sense. But when you don't have the point of view of person, the whole reincarnation thing falls away. You see how continuation happens. You see how incarnation happens, right? But it's all consciousness. There's no birth happening. There's no death happening. there's a cycling of consciousness. I don't know what else to say about that. It's hard to talk, it's hard to describe. It's like any words that you use are wrong. If I was with you in a room, I could give you an example. I gave an example. This question came up in Ireland, and I was able to use toilet paper and create an image for them and show them, and I think at least some of them understood. But without being together, it's very difficult for, you know, without me having a visual aid, it's very difficult for me to show you how the appearance of reincarnation may occur from the point of view of a person, but in reality, there never is and never has been such a thing from the point of view of consciousness. But I can show you that sometime when we're together. Just ask me the question when we're together in person, and I'll pull out the toilet paper and show you. I need toilet paper and a magic marker, and I can show you. Or, you know, or I could do it with clay or whatever's on hand. But realize that when people believe in reincarnation, they're actually looking from the point of view of personhood. Consciousness does not see such a thing. Right? Consciousness just simply doesn't see that way. And so again, that's what Ramana Maharshi is saying. Does one's actions not affect one in later births? He says, are you born now? You know what I mean? Look at who you are. Look at what you are, right? Are you born now? Why do you think of other births? The fact is, there is neither birth nor death, and that is a fact. Let him who is born think of death and the pain thereof. And there's an exclamation point after that. So he's really telling this guy, forget about that because you're consciousness. And then this guy asks, sometimes when I read this book, I wonder who put the book together. I'm certain it wasn't Ramana Maharshi, because I feel really certain in myself that if Ramana Maharshi had selected certain talks to put in this book, some of these talks wouldn't be here, because the questions just have nothing to do with truth or self-realization, right? It's a person talking about their beliefs. Talking about their beliefs is what they're doing. His next question says, can you show us the dead? Right? He's asking Ramana Maharshi, can you show me the dead? You know, which shows that he has no clarity at all, regarding what Ramana Maharshi is saying to him. He's still thinking from the perspective of person. And continuation must mean continuation of persons, right? And he asks, can you show us the dead? And Ramana Maharshi says, did you know your kinsmen before their birth that you should seek to know them after their death? You know, again, he's just telling this man, forget about those types of things. Just forget about them. You know, what that's going to do is keep you in ignorance, thinking in that way. Let go of thinking with ignorance and seek truth. Seek higher, right? All right, so now the next word I don't know, not because it's an English word I don't know, but because it's a Hindu word I don't know. So let me look it up before I read. It's like Gurhastha. Let me see if I can find that word in the glossary and know what that is. Oh, what time is it? Oh, never mind. I just looked at the time and I'm out of time. So we'll have to start with this question about Gurhastha next time. Now, I won't be here next week because I will be on family vacation. So it'll be a couple of weeks before I'm back. Maybe three. I'll look into that and let you know. But at least a couple of weeks. All right? So I'm letting go of the mic.